Hi, you're listening to Adrienne Barbeau and Quality Time Broadcast.
I'm just going to do it one more time.
Quality Time, video games, all the girls, comedy and matches. Quality Time, video games, all the girls, comedy and matches.
To see people that are more emotional, that you look up to as emotionally damaged.
I can tell
because you're already there.
Yes. Damaged?
Yeah.
he meant stable, Jeremy. He meant stable.
Completely fine. Well, anyway, welcome to Quality Time, everybody. Yay! We're back in the saddle again. Going over the greatest movies in all of history. My name is Eric
really?
Woodworth. Yeah.
13 greatest movies. Ghosts.
13 Ghosts is up there.
Top five.
15% on Rotten Tomatoes.
It's on my numbered ghost movies. It is in the Mount Rushmore.
It was 4.5 stars on I think Amazon Prime Video. Though.
Yeah,
I think Geely gets a higher rating than this Geely on Rotten Tomatoes.
Geely is underrated. Geely is very underrated.
People
anyway,
don't appreciate Affleck the way they should.
The man to my right I'd like to introduce is none other than my blood, my brother, Mr. Jeremy P. Woodworth. Jeremy, how are you, sir?
I don't know who you're talking about.
I apologize. Who is on the show this evening?
It's Ben, and I like to sing a little song. Candy-colored clown, they call the Sandman. Whispers to my room every night. Sprinkle, sprinkle, sparkle. Go to sleep. Everything is all right.
That was good. That was good. Ben.
That's for Ben Hancock.
Yes, our other guest
hasn't
for this
seen
evening.
Blue Velvet.
Yes, you made references
so
about a character that people barely know in our
it's
listenership.
It's only a 35-year-old movie. You haven't seen it?
To our guest who definitely doesn't know what it is.
Who is younger than 35.
Yeah. And none other than our guest this evening from the Laugh Finder podcast, Our intrepid audiomancer, Mr. Ben Hancock.
Audiomancer.
Hancock.
Yeah. Oh, that's what they say. Yeah, I'm Ben.
Hey,
he can
Ben,
work
welcome.
The board like none other.
I jiggle those whatever you call them, the little...
Yeah. How's it going, Ben?
It's going good. How are you guys?
Good to have you on the show, finally.
Yeah, I'm very excited.
Welcome to another dank basement where internet radio is made.
Now, let me ask you, the way Jim's is set up is it's really just a real nice studio, mm-hmm. and then they just put stuff up to make it look like you're in a basement.
Yes.
Is this a basement?
We went authentic basement.
And by the way, this really isn't insulation. This is just for my protection against the demons.
Yes.
Good. Yeah.
We're surrounded by tinfoil down here, so we don't turn the frogs gay.
So you can take your hat off when you come downstairs. Yes.
If I get a little too close to the wall, the hands try to punch out and grab me, but I keep at least a foot away from the wall.
And that's just so Eric can keep you out of the house as much as he can.
Yes. Yeah.
I said, Eric, we can do this podcast. As long as there's plenty of tinfoil on the walls, I'll be fine.
I like that you've got a nice two TV screens, one for Tybo, one for Quality
yeah,
Time.
Yeah, because you can't fuck up the studio, okay? If
I like
you want to get down here and get your sweat on, that's one thing. You're not going to mess with the giant TV over here that I use once a week.
Yeah, you can
okay?
pump iron, you can pump levels.
That's how we roll, man. That is how we roll. Jeremy, you provided us, you've been busy at work this week, been in the studio.
Yes.
Recording hot tracks.
Minutes on end.
We've been officially 1 week without Kim Ambrose now. And it's RIP. She's as good as dead. Mm-hmm. By the way, I have your wedding invitation, by the way.
Yes.
It's upstairs because she actually mailed me your wedding invitation because she didn't trust sending it to your house.
That makes sense.
So if your wife needs to go, let me know and I'll write her in. Anyway, I have you wrote a special song for Kim's absence.
Yes.
Would you like to preface this with anything?
I wrote it all myself. I base it on any other popular song by any other super group from the 70s, like Hall & Oates or anything. This is all me.
Okay, this is a completely 100% original song. Without further ado, here is Jeremy's Song of the Week.
time. Gee, you really could enjoy a dick joke, yeah. Now we're gonna have to be a little bit funnier now. Cause Kim's not here at all. She's gone!
She's gone!
She's gone!
She's gone!
She's gone!
Okay, Jeremy with She's Gone. Jeremy.
Phenomenal.
There's nothing,
you've been working hard, man.
Nothing like the Daryl Hall, John Boats version.
Yes, yeah. Nothing like the Hall & Oates version.
While we're talking about Kimberly, I just would like to present to you guys a little thing that I put together.
Oh, there's
in honor of you and Kim.
Oh, my goodness. What is this?
So please, Kim, tell me it's a dildo.
When you, God damn it, Jeremy. You can't keep it to yourself. That's the best money I spent this week.
Oh, my gosh. Should I paint a picture for the listeners?
Yeah, because that's what it is.
It's a half-inch thick piece of MDF board, very nicely finished.
Mm-hmm.
And on the front
high gloss,
of it,
high gloss,
right? High gloss imagery of the guy from Terminator 1. And
it was a request put in by Kim.
it's the guy from Terminator 1. The black guy who's in the movie for 30
otherwise
seconds.
Known to say, on the telephone? What is Ben talking about on the telephone?
Ben, this is amazing. Thank you so much. Yeah, it's going to go right next to our picture of Chris Restivo up here with me.
Almost his genitals out.
What an honor. So.
That's a picture of me with Chris Restivo where I had my balls out, but I cropped my balls out.
Big mistake.
It really, Chris hated it. So I hung it in my basement down here.
I gotta be honest, the first impression I ever had of you was one time Tommy was telling me about you and him traveling to, I guess, DC somewhere, and he showed me a video of his balls.
Yeah,
talking.
Bally Shore. Bally Shore, yes.
It is one of my favorite memories of you and Tommy.
Tommy did this thing when we were actually in different vehicles. He was riding with Rob, and I was with, I think, Sean Gabbert and actually Dylan Meyer.
Okay.
R.I.P. Dylan Meyer. Back from maybe it was Virginia Beach Funny Bone or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they had opened up. He and Tommy had opened up for Pauly Shore leading up to the murder mystery. So we came down for the Sunday show.
Right.
So they had spent Thursday to Saturday already there with Pauly Shore.
Getting Paulied up.
And Tommy started doing an impersonation of Pauly Shore.
Which is pretty good.
He would draw a smiley face on his balls and he's like, "Hey, it's me, Pauly Shore. Hey." And we were getting Snapchats all day as we were driving a Bally Shore. Like, "Hey, it's me. I'm on the road again. It's me, the Whistle." Bally Shore was pretty good, though.
Yeah, R.I.P. Bally Shore.
You know, I can't discount the comic genius of Tommy Cimbazzo. And Tommy Cimbazzo is going to be returning again. He's going to be filling in a lot while Kim's on her hiatus.
All right.
Jeremy, can you guess what movie Tommy picked for us in about 2 weeks?
Well, I know he really likes Whitney Houston. So I'm going to guess it's
if I told you
the Kevin Costner movie where he's the bodyguard.
I haven't seen this movie, but this is the one that Tommy picked for us in 2 weeks. All right. Have you heard of a little movie starring Joe Piscopo called Dead Heat?
Dead Heat?
Yeah, Dead Heat.
Is that with the guy from Hair as the lead?
No, I don't know.
It's the sequel to Blue Velvet.
But we're doing Dead Heat, starring Joe Piscopo.
Oh, Joe Piscopo.
Yes.
Why did you say Joe Pesci?
I said Joe Piscopo both times, 100%. And Ben, fact check me on that one.
Is he a dead man in the
Joe
movie?
Robinson.
I think
no
it's about a dead cop.
Dead cop.
That's
okay.
Come back to life.
Okay.
It's called Dead Heat.
I think I remember seeing some of it and forgot over all these years because it was that important to me.
It's time to get revamped up.
That's exactly like the type of movie
we're
Tommy
getting
would
into
pick.
It.
All right.
Now, we do have a couple of corrections from some past episodes that Joe Robinson has been getting on
Joe Robinson's
my
theme?
Nuts about. And without further ado.
Hey, questions.
Okay, so the Joe Robinson corrections for this week. Jeremy thinks the most expensive homes are in... this is in regards to you taking your wife to Hunt Valley.
Yes.
And then he goes, Jeremy thinks the most expensive homes in Maryland are not in Hunt Valley.
Did say they're in Hunt Valley. Where do I think they are?
No, he thinks the most expensive homes in Maryland are in Hunt Valley. They're not.
Well, where are they?
It's definitely Potomac. There's no question in the world that Potomac is the most expensive homes in Maryland.
You mean in D.C. or Virginia?
Last time I checked, Potomac is still in Montgomery County, which is in Maryland, which is the richest county in all of the United States.
Right, but D.C. or Virginia, Eric?
Because I know Potomac Mills is in Virginia.
That he's doubled down on it. He's like, agree to disagree, Joe.
Sure, sure.
Numbers. I'd check your numbers.
Well, I would just say, who's been to Potomac? So who knows where that is?
A lot of people.
He goes, and Steve Bisciotti lives in White Marsh, so he doesn't even live in Hunt Valley. There's
Ray Lewis and Cal Ripken and Linda Carter lived in Hunt Valley. So.
Okay, well, listen, I'm not saying...
Who lives in Potomac? A basketball player?
He's the owner of the Ravens.
Why don't you name me a star that lives in Potomac?
Dan Snyder. Dan Snyder.
Who's
the owner
that? I don't even know who that is.
He owns the Redskins. He's one of the most vilified people on the face of the planet.
Who are the Redskins? So. Is that a team?
Sorry. Jeremy doesn't see color.
Sorry.
I don't know what this means, but lots of corrections by my favorite, Jeremy, referring to Janine.
Janine Garofalo.
Janine Garofalo calls the truth about cats and dogs. He calls it the truth about cats and dogs. And then he says, must love cats. Which doesn't exist.
I think that was the sequel. Must Love Cats was the sequel to Must Love Dogs.
And so. I'll see if I can find the audio for this, but he says, at 1:42, Jeremy says, misturbated instead of masturbated.
I misturbated. And so, I liked to masturbate to Mr.
Mr. So. Mr. I misturbate.
Take these golden wings.
And let me touch myself until the squirt watches. Hold you back. How hard is it to jerk off with broken wings? Am I right? I mean,
you get the tempo right, and then you're all right. I'm thinking
it's not. That's an all Madden jerk off right there. You understand? Is all Madden still a legit phrase for the kids today? I don't know if they know
Madden?
That's the hardest setting when you play all Madden in John Madden football. It's called All Madden.
Do they still have that
There's
setting?
Easy, medium, hard, and then there's All Madden.
Because that was on Super Nintendo, right?
No, it existed all through the PlayStation days and up until Xbox. I haven't played it in at least 6 or 7 years, so I can't verify the most recent of games. But, I don't know, the Quality Timers, let us know on our... we'll open up a poll. Do you think All Madden means the hardest setting? Let me know.
Yeah, send in some 5-star reviews about it, and I'll read them on Laugh-Line.
Exactly.
Is that where you have to be drinking heavily and... To play the All Madden mode?
Yes.
I can barely play. I'm so drunk.
I just huffed 4 cans of Tenactin, and I can barely stand.
It wasn't a stroke. It was Jack Daniels.
All Madden.
Well, that's good. So those are Joe Robinson corrections for the week. I'm sure we'll have some more as we don't fact check anything here, which it's the fun of the show. It's living on an edge that we call fun.
We're living on the edge.
We're living on
just
edge. So should we get into tonight's topic, everybody? Are we ready?
Yeah.
Are we ready to go?
Ooh, we got a topic?
Yeah.
Is it a hot topic?
It is a hot topic. We're going over the 2001 masterpiece, 13 Ghosts.
Woo! Wow, I wish we had a song for this movie.
Oh.
13 Ghosts. Not one ghost. Not two ghosts. Not three ghosts. 13 ghosts.
Okay, was that that's Jeremy again with the hotness.
I think I should have gone all the way up to 12.
to all the 12, yes, all the ghosts.
It could have made it a lot more annoying. Mm-hmm. So.
You think so? Yeah. Like if we just brought it in?
Yeah. I think Joe Robinson tuned out at 2.
Yeah, because there's not just one ghost. There's 12 more.
We're hoping that our listenership at one point just says, fuck this, and turns it off. God damn, you asshole.
Well, what you mean like this?
Yes.
13 ghosts. Here's the ghosts. Here they are.
Kid, gotta read it.
The firstborn son. Torso.
The torso.
The bound woman.
Yeah, she's
in a
stockade.
Really get going for
the
this.
Withered lover. The torn prince.
Ooh.
The angry princess.
She's so hot. She's the
very
torn up
attractive
titties. I loved her. I got in Facebook jail for posting a picture
the
of her.
Great child and the dire mother.
There is a midget in this movie.
Yes.
The hammer.
He's the coolest looking one out of all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise known as O.J. Simpson when he dies.
The juggernaut. And the broken heart. Those were the 13 ghosts. The 13 ghosts you know.
Good, Jeremy. Okay, look, I don't even think we need to do an episode anymore. We've got it all down
That's
now.
That's a wrap.
13
goes. I'm hoping this can get me into the either the band Korn or Slipknot. So.
Yes, I think this is a very Slipknot-y song. Yeah. I've done my 13 ghosts.
You know, we heard your song 13 ghosts. You're part of the band now.
Got any cool masks?
You're now lead keg player. That's fun, man.
We know
That's
you fun. Already dress up as a clown.
Now, this movie 13 Ghosts came out in 2001 and is a has a whopping 54% on Rotten Tomatoes. Ooh. I think very underrated. Very underrated. Mm-hmm. I mean, not a great story, I'll be honest with you. But it has some pretty good good special effects in it. There's some good makeup and stuff like that. It's one of Matthew Lillard's greatest films. Okay?
Hands down.
I can only name three Matthew Lillard films, and this is one of them.
Well, I might have a little shock, Jeremy, one you might not know of.
Oh.
A Matthew Lillard film where he goes solving mysteries with a team involving a dog.
Oh, Jeremy, do you know what that is?
Can you name it?
Movies with dogs that might be based on like a cartoon from the 60s?
I didn't say cartoon, but it might be.
Mm. I think the whole thing is just bad casting where you have a movie about ghosts that's obviously they couldn't get the rest of the Green Machine, so.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Green Machine. He didn't get it right, so I stumped him on that one.
But they can all be smoking weed during the film, so like, where are we going to find all these 13 ghosts, Scoob? I don't know! Except there's no unmasking, except they really try to unmask him and actually tear somebody's real face off, yeah. So.
Now, this movie, when it came out in 2001, is groundbreaking. Yes, I can. Sorry, Jerry passed me a note.
Yes.
Now, when this movie came out in 2001, it was pretty groundbreaking. Can you guess why it was groundbreaking, folks? And I'm really just killing time because Jeremy asked me to pull up some audio.
Groundbreaking. I'm going to say the first semi not sucky CGI.
Nope, that's not true.
Half
not true.
Decayed boobs.
Half decayed boobs is a good call, but not the answer I was looking for.
Okay.
This was actually the first movie in U.S. history, the first major motion picture release that had not one, not two, but three lead characters that are from the Middle East. One being star Tony Shalhoub, who's from the hit show Monk.
Shalhoub, Pee Wee.
Yeah, Tony Shalhoub.
Jungle out there. You saw the ink of you everywhere.
Don't touch my hands. They're gross.
Oh, I need to wash my hands because I'm Tony Shalhoub.
The worst part is that there's ectoplasm everywhere. He can barely touch anything through the whole movie. So.
There better not be a public restroom here.
So Tony Shalhoub is obviously a Middle Easterner, as well as Shannon Elizabeth, which I didn't know. She's from the Middle East. And the last but not least is F. Murray Abraham, who is you might know from the movie Scarface. He's the guy who
he's the guy that killed Amadeus.
Yeah, he's the guy in the car. He's like, "What do you know about cocaine?" Okay,
you're kidding me.
And he also dies at the hands of Sosa. He hangs him out of the helicopter in front of Tony Montana in the movie. He's going, "Oh, big man, you want to make some big bucks, huh?"
I never like him. He got my friend killed. Anyway, so.
But yeah, so three people from the Middle East star in this movie.
And where is he from?
They're from the Middle East. That's all I know.
Oh, you don't know where? Okay.
I didn't look it up. I don't know. You know, there's somewhere in the middle. You know, like the middle area.
It drives me crazy when I don't know that they're a foreigner.
So, the movie opens up. And
my favorite song is "Cold as Ice."
So, the movie opens up to SUVs breaking into a junkyard, and a team wearing like duct taped uniforms and like hazmat suits slowly sets up machinery everywhere in this what looks like a Mad Max like apocalypse junkyard. A Rolls Royce also pulls up, where we see Matthew Lillard, who plays Dennis, and a guy basically the guy who gets hung from Scarface, Mr. Arthur, who plays Cyrus.
F. Murray Abraham.
Foreigner. So, Dennis's head is exploding. We quickly find out that he is actually a telepath, and he has psychic powers where he can touch things, and if he touches anybody, he can see shit. He's asking for some pills that, you know, Cyrus says, "You need to be clear-headed."
He also knows the plot to every single horror film ever made.
Yes. So he touches the ground and sees a horrible vision. He goes, "Oh my god, man, you didn't tell me you killed like 40 people." And it's some of the best Matthew Lillardisms that you're ever going to see. Yeah. Because I'll admit, I remember I was a big fan of the movie Scream growing up, and I remember Matthew Lillard from Scream. I was like, "Oh, that dude's crazy." And I realized, I was like, no, he literally just is that person all the time. There was no acting that occurred. That's just how Matthew Lillard is. If you watch Hackers or if you watch this, his only acting he ever did was in the movie Scooby-Doo, where he played Shaggy, a stoner. He was just like, "I'm going to act chill. This is chill, Matthew Lillard."
All
right,
man.
You know, there's only one actor that can out craze active. Gary Busey's son.
Jake Busey. You made a Jake Busey reference this far into the show. We weren't even ready for all that.
Nobody's ready for Jake Busey.
I do think Cyrus's character in this scene should have been Bill Cosby's lawyer, though, because he's like, he says, "I thought he only killed 9 people." He's like, "Yeah, he added a few." Like, if he had been Bill Cosby's lawyer, well, what's a few girls?
You know, you get the fucking and you get the sleeping and the next stupid and doop boop boop.
I slipped a few drugs and a few drinks.
It's not really rape when they're sleeping.
How do they even know? They never saw it.
It was a nap attack.
So, We see these two people that come and approach Cyrus and Dennis, and they're clearly some type of people that are trying to stop him, but their men easily stop them. One of them is Kalina, I think her name is. Kalina, is that right? Let's see. Yes.
Let me tell you a story. Kalina, Belina, Felina. That means I kissed a girl. Mufaga, Muglaga, Bugla. That means I kissed a girl's ass.
Kachuka, Baluka, Banuka.
And you know what that means.
So Kalina and her boyfriend are there, but they're quickly reprimanded. They bring out this giant thing called the Cube, which is basically a contraption that can catch ghosts. Mm-hmm. And then they go to summon the ghost there, who happens to be the Juggernaut. Not trademark Marvel. Not trademark Marvel Comics. I'm sorry. This is just a Juggernaut, not the Juggernaut. So
I'm the Juggernaut, bitch!
I thought it was pretty interesting that how they set this up. Like, this guy who's a billionaire who's trying to catch ghosts has a 18-wheeler that just sprays blood everywhere. Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. First of all, it's metal as fuck. But is it the most practical use of your money?
Well,
I don't know.
Here's the thing. You don't buy that. You rent that from Guar.
I have to return this to Odorous by midnight. They have a concert.
It came with the giant penis, okay?
If only the deleted scenes has him talking to Sleazy P. You're going to have my blood truck by the end of the night. So, I know you're a billionaire, but I'm a trillionaire. Hey.
So they also set up the special seeing glasses. They're spectral glasses that you can put on, and basically they're like light up glasses that you're supposed to be able to see the spirits around you. So this was also, I remember seeing this movie in the theaters. It was also, I believe, in 3D, and they would give you the glasses at certain parts. You'd put the glasses on, you'd be able to see, like, if you took them off, you couldn't see the monsters in the theater, but if you put them on, you could see the ghosts.
Wow.
And stuff like that.
Ooh.
So it was a big selling
so
point to the movie.
They couldn't afford the 3D through the whole film, obviously. Yeah.
So not 3D the whole film. No. Only for part, kind of like Freddy's Dead, where there's only like a scene right. where
they
it's
blew
in
the
3D.
Budget on Matthew Lillard.
Yes.
Put your 3D glasses on now, you cheap bastards.
So the blood goes everywhere, which why blood is attract. I don't know why it attracts this Juggernaut monster, but it does, and it starts to fuck shit up.
Hey, by the way, I know that blood it attracts ghosts. You know, you put blood everywhere, that's when the ghosts come. So I just know it.
Thanks, Brett.
I know it. I read it on the internet. So, and by the way, the Earth's also flat. So.
Well, amen, brother.
So, the Juggernaut comes in and he starts fucking shit up. Some highlights of it is there's one body that gets stuffed in the trunk of a car, like through the slit mm-hmm. of like a half open trunk door, and just kind of folds
like
him
a real
in
good
half.
Vacuum.
Yeah, just folds him in half through the little like I'm put. It's like pushing a letter like long ways, like up and down through a mail mm-hmm. slot. That's what they
like,
do.
Remember
to a body.
When you would take your old Stretch Armstrong and fold him the wrong way?
That's exactly
much like the Blob pulling a body through a doorway.
Yes, very mm-hmm. similar. Mm-hmm. So they fold him. There's another guy that he picks up a whole car and just like crunches him with it, like hits him like fucking like a steel chair would a professional wrestler when somebody's on the ground. Mm-hmm. And then one of the guys runs into the little cube box, and the Juggernaut follows him in. They shut the doors, but boy, did that guy not have a good day after that. He gets
not
fucking manhandled inside mm-hmm. the cube. But they were
not in a good Bill Cosby way.
Yeah, not, you know, Bill Cosby never killed anybody.
No, he was gentle and loving.
I don't think so. I don't think those were things that he did. I think it was nefarious, rapey. But you know what? You know they never say don't meet your heroes. Am I right? So that. Oh, Jeremy has audio he's pulling up. Okay, I'm done.
Sounded good.
So the Juggernaut himself looks like kind of like almost like Frankenstein's monster mixed with Bob White from the Heaven's Gate.
I think it was you ever seen the movie Scrooged?
Yes.
And the Ghost of Christmas Past.
Yeah, where, pretty spot
the
on
golf
right there.
Ball, yeah, it's what he's doing the other 11 months out of the year.
I get it. He's the Ghost of Christmas Past. You know, I come back for these blood orgies once a year, and
it's like, we gotta eat.
Other than that, I'm scaring Bill Murray. You
look,
know?
Man,
that's what I do.
It's golf and junkyards.
You know, ghost work is tough because it's a hard market. There's a lot of other ghosts out there.
You don't understand how diluted it is out here.
It's hard work to do. Let's see.
I'll carry on this.
Okay, Cyrus does die in the opening.
You ever seen the movie Amadeus?
I don't think that's how you pronounce it.
Amadeus, yes.
Well, that's the way they pronounce it in Last Action Hero, so.
Oh. Who knows better than Schwarzenegger?
He killed Amadeus!
Which I found out, him trying to do any accent other than Austrian is like me trying to spell his last name.
You know, the amazing thing is the Terminator can do any mimic any voice except real American English.
Yeah. Oh, g'day, mate. All right, now English, Arnold.
So the
I'm a supercomputer. Fuck you, asshole.
The body count after the first scene is pretty astonishing, but we're left with the billionaire bad guy Cyrus. He is chopped in the neck by the end of this opening sequence, as well as Kalina's boyfriend. She is also perishes at the hands of the Juggernaut.
And the rest of the movie explains how he killed Amadeus. So.
Yes, yes.
Because he chops in something in his throat.
That's Amadeus.
Next, we get to see the very beautiful Shannon Elizabeth, who plays Kathy in the film, which is such a white lady's name. Like, she is not a Kathy at all. Like, Kathy is a girl with glasses that goes to the library 8 times a week.
Ooh, yeah.
And is never gonna fuck before marriage. Might not fuck into, like, year three of marriage, okay?
Maybe Mormon.
But this is, she's not a Kathy. And
her real name is either Maud or Moonchild.
Yes. We also meet Arthur, who's played by Tony Shalhoub of the show Monk. And they are enjoying a fun day at the house. Through the sequence of the opening credits, you get to see that there was a house fire at their home, that their mother of both Bobby and Kathy was burned up and died in the fire.
Beautiful montage.
Yeah, it is actually a really well put together thing. It gives you that whole shitty backstory that we don't really care to know. they give us all that. They give us some
Shalhoub.
Yeah, yeah. By the time they like pan around the room, there's like there's bills on the wall that are like overdue and stuff like that, and we're like, okay, we see it. They're in financial hardships right now. They lost their mother. Tony Shalhoub is just a single father now who's trying to get by. And then they open up the movie that now they're living in like a small apartment, it looks like.
Real cluttered.
And already they've broken their rule of like, all right, yeah, we're a family that's strapped for cash. I have my daughter, Shannon Elizabeth. She's cooking eggs in the morning. I'm too busy. And they have a fucking nanny that they've just hired.
Live-in.
Yeah, live-in nanny because I got the scratch to do that because I need my son Bobby to deal with this lady who is played by none other than Rod Digga. If you aren't familiar with her, she was a semi-popular hip-hop artist from the 90s. And early 2000s. I believe she was with Ludacris's crew. Rod Digga. Are you a big Rod Digga fan, Jeremy?
I'm feeling kind of bad and scared just to say the word Digga.
No, it's her name. We're allowed to. We're allowed to say Rod Digga.
Just don't say Digger.
Yes. Yeah. Whoa.
Jeez.
Hard R on the Digger.
We're not watching Mystery Men, okay?
Jeez. So they're cramped in this apartment. Tensions are high. He trips over Bobby's razor scooter. Like, can it get any more late 90s, 2000s? Like, damn it, Bobby, you left your razor scooter here. Sorry, Dad. He's like, why don't you wear your rollerblades like a regular heterosexual? So the lawyer comes and visits them, and it is the lawyer for Cyrus that comes to inform Arthur that he has left him the house. Here is a little bit of audio from that.
Sadly, if you're watching this now, it means I am no longer among the living. Happily, that makes you and your family my sole beneficiaries. A key to your new house. It is a one-of-a-kind home. It's my home, actually. My home. Perhaps we'll meet again.
I hate to say that F. Murray Abraham had the perfect nose for smoking, for doing coke.
Yes, he looks like he should always only be doing cocaine.
Like those little vials of cocaine, he would do every single one of those in a single shot.
Also,
big man, want to make some big bucks.
Why the hell are they trusting this lawyer? He walks in, he's got a weird key. His computer background is something out of like the what's that book for the dead?
Oh, the Necronomicon. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I wouldn't trust this guy.
Actually, my background was inked in human blood. I hope that's okay with you guys. This is it's a very beautiful. It actually summons all the greatest parts of Satan.
And here's my favorite episode of Peppa Pig.
Yes.
I hate to say this movie is probably the biggest ripoff of, like, a Hellraiser. And really, they should have had a house full of the Hellraiser demons that they had caught. And of course, it was all the design of the Hellraiser, like the last after three ended. It's like, oh look, they made an entire office building that looks like the the LeMand configuration. That's kind of weird. Yeah, I hope it doesn't change into a giant GoBot or something and then start taking over the city.
I hate when GoBots take over the whole city. So next, we see a brief little montage with Kalina as the family heads to Willow Grove, where the house is. Wait. And Kalina is played by Embeth Davids, a.k.a. the nice lady from Matilda.
My favorite line.
Yeah.
My favorite line from GoBot Hellraiser is... it's just a puzzle box. Oh no, it's much more. So
good.
Yes.
I didn't think that GoBot Hellraiser had wheels, but I was wrong. You delivered on that.
I am also the LeMand configuration. I turn into a moped.
So they she loads up, Kalina loads up on a bunch of spell books and stuff like that, and dynamite. Mm-hmm. She's just like, I need spells and I need dynamite to go help out this family, because she, I guess, knows that the family's going there.
Jimmy Walker.
So the family pulls up to the house. You get the first look at this ominous structure. It's a modern-looking house, just like covered with glass windows that have inscriptions on it, all in Latin everywhere. Really beautiful-looking modern home, somewhere where I think Kimberly Ambrose could really find herself.
Absolutely.
I mean, just like all these spells, keeps demons out. I mean, I think it's a pretty nice little digs. Mm-hmm. So as they walk up, they go to grab the key, and there is a power guy there who is actually Dennis in disguise, aka Matthew Lillard. And he's just like, listen, man, I'm just trying to get in this house and check shit out. And don't bust my balls or whatever. Because he only talks like he's fucking like 10 joints deep and very
Shalhoub
stressed.
Tony turns
up
to the kids. He's like, I could swear that's fucking Matthew Lillard.
No, that looks like the guy from Scream. Does that look like the guy from Scream?
He's acting a lot like
Shannon
him.
Elizabeth goes, you like Skeet Ulrich? No, the other one. I can't remember his name. What was it? Son of a bitch. Anyway, so... Tony Shalhoub, a.k.a. Arthur, lets him in, even though the lawyer is just like, get the hell out of here. He's just like, lets him in. They use the key, which is this fucking funky-shaped ass, like, microchip-looking thing. And then all of a sudden, fucking all the gears start turning, and it's literally Tommy Cimbazzo's wet dream.
Oh,
like, it just,
God,
like,
yeah.
It like turns the gears in this door that all of a sudden turns gears in the house. Things start spinning. Lights come on. It starts making breakfast for them. Like, it's just a ridiculous amount
of
action.
Some obscure Japanese version of a superhero movie comes on.
Yeah. So,
also, the power comes on.
Yes. Which
and
is,
then they still let Matthew Lillard in.
Well, I got a chick meter, you know? Like,
just want to make sure you're below your quota.
So, inside, the house is completely, all the walls are glass and has more of those weird inscriptions everywhere. So you can like see through like almost the whole house except from like first floor to second floor, which is pretty. Honestly, it's pretty cool looking so far. I mean, there's a lot that went into the set design here, and I can give them credit for that.
Mm-hmm. Probably the best use of a glass block of any other house ever made.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that. So Dennis breaks off, and he from the others, and he goes, Cyrus, you crazy son of a bitch, what did you do? And the lawyer mentions that this is a living piece of art. They enter a giant room where there's like a giant sundial on the floor almost. It has all these type of ancient inscriptions and characters all the way around. Looks like it could probably spin. And when they open the door, you did get to see some of those little gears moving around on the floor. Arthur ultimately leaves the room with the lawyer to sign some papers and tells his family to stay there. they immediately disobey him and immediately just like, fuck you, Dad. I'm immediately going to explore this house.
When
right?
your nanny is Rod Digga.
Yes. He's like, when you're with Rod Digga, you check out what you need, girl. By the way, Rod Digga's name in this is Maggie. Like, the whitest of white mm-hmm. names. Like, people are named so inappropriately.
If anyone's more Mormon than Kathy.
Yes. Yeah, so he's like, oh, Kathy is the hottest chick in the whole world. And Rod Digga, this street savvy rapper woman turned daytime care assistant.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's Maggie. Yes, clearly Maggie.
It's our friend, like, Mags.
Mags. So, Dennis then goes down into the basement to find the old man's money. He gets a horrifying vision of the old woman's face. Flashes of the ghost race through his head. He's like going through convulsions downstairs. He puts on his glasses to get a better vision of what's going through his brain, and the ghosts start appearing behind all the walls. Mm-hmm. They're all trapped in like almost little cells down mm-hmm. there.
Cells.
Yes. So he can see the 13 ghosts all stuck behind the glass partitions.
Well, we see 12 ghosts.
12 ghosts, that is correct. There's only 12 ghosts down there right now. But two of them get to stay together, the giant
That's
son
true.
And the...
Jeremy and his baby.
Jeremy and also Jeremy.
I think it was Michael Moore's greatest role, so...
Yes, good. Good call. So Dennis comes back upstairs to warn Arthur, and he explains to him that he used to ghost hunt with Cyrus, and he goes, you know, like Demi Moore Unchained Melody Man, like, which is probably my favorite line from this movie. Oh man. Obviously he's referencing the movie Ghost and the song Unchained Melody. Man, good stuff. Good
stuff.
You know
stuff. My new favorite song?
What's that?
Rats.
Rats.
Ah!
So, meanwhile, Bobby and Rod Digga explore the house on Razor Scooter.
Mm-hmm.
Kathy goes and finds her own little room upstairs and finds this like nice soft bed.
Oh, yeah.
The lawyer tries to discredit Dennis, saying he's in it for the money. And Dennis goes, I agree. He owed me a shit ton of money. But Dennis then has a mini seizure. Arthur comes over to try to comfort him. And then he then sees his burnt up wife, like mm-hmm. in a vision. And he's like, don't touch me. Anybody who touches me, I can see shit, man.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of things being established. The one thing I can say about this movie, the pacing is fast throughout all this.
Yeah.
You don't get much wait time with anything. You get scene, next scene,
I've
scene, next scene.
I've lived in Baltimore for some time, and if someone tells me not to touch them because they see dead people when I touch them, I'm not going to let them stay in my house.
That's true. You can leave 100%.
Yeah.
So the lawyer heads downstairs with the glasses to go check shit out. He's not fazed by seeing all the ghosts downstairs. He's like, look at you, ugly. So he starts talking shit like a scumbag. He goes to get the money that's sitting on like this set of levers. He just stupidly picks the money up immediately, not worrying about it.
Never watched Indiana Jones.
Goes to walk out, and the door shuts, and then all of the place starts like moving, and doors and walls start shifting. It's almost like an insane maze of that's being released, and some of the spirits start to be released.
Ooh.
The lawyer comes face to face with the ghost. With a ghost with the best set of tits in the whole thing.
Hot.
And that is, I believe, the tortured princess, which is, oh, gosh. I remember as a young child watching this movie that this was probably the best set
triggered
of movies.
Triggered for masturbation.
Yeah.
Yes, trigger. I've jerked off to these sliced up titties before in my life.
It answered the question for me, am I into necrophilia?
Yes.
And yeah.
I am. I'm into it.
For sure.
And I also got into Facebook jail for posting a picture of this lady's fake prosthetic titties
uncool.
With giant like cut marks over the nipples, where I'm like, this can't be nudity because it's clearly prosthetic. Like, I've seen more things in Facebook than this.
It really made me think of a classic Dave Attell bit where he's talking about having sex with a retarded girl, and he says, she's retarded, but them titties ain't retarded. And all I could think is, she's decaying, but them titties ain't decaying.
If it's good enough for Kurt Cobain, it's good enough for anybody, so...
So the Angry Princess is one of the ghosts that gets a lot of airtime. Her backstory is that she's Dina Newman, who didn't believe in her own natural beauty. She had an abusive boyfriend, and she had low self-esteem, and ultimately she ended up committing suicide by slitting her wrists in the tub.
You gathered all of that from...
No, this is the hard-hitting research.
Oh, okay.
I looked at IMDb.
And I do constantly to make this show go around the clock. So
they give unbelievable amount of research of what could have actually been a better film.
Yes, yeah. So, the ghost, she's completely nude. She has cut marks all over. She's super hot. She comes at him with a knife and starts walking him. And then just as he backs up, a giant glass partition comes and like a wall closes and literally bisects him like perfectly in half.
Pretty fucking cool.
It is a pretty cool death scene,
I'm a
right?
fan.
I must admit, these really powerful closing doors... to only later in the film see a woman like try to keep one from closing, and of course she does almost keep it from closing just by putting her hands on it. I'm like, oh well, there goes the continuity. So you know.
It literally can turn a man into it can treat a man's torso like a chop slap, mm-hmm. but like if it's lady with very minimal force can stop it. Mm-hmm. Okay, like I get it.
That's a little rude that you're assuming how much she can handle.
But it is pretty cool. It literally cuts him like right from ear to ear. And halves him, and like the front of his whole body just kind of slides down, and the back of it's still on the other side.
Fucking cool.
Pretty fucking cool effect to me. Jeremy, what did you hate about it?
Well, it's all about the special effects for goring out people, and you take long enough so that it's like, even though they turn away, like, ew, they still turn back just in time to go, ah, damn it! It's still going on! The guy that did the Omen, I forget his name, big time director, he's like, the time it took for David Warner's head to be cut off by that glass, we timed it when people would close their eyes so that when they look back up, oh no, it's still going on. He's still getting his head cut off. It's awesome.
So Dennis and Arthur decide they need to split up to look for his children. Kathy is currently upstairs looking at herself in the mirror, not realizing that the sweet-titted ghost is looking over her shoulder, checking herself out too. Below, a series of gears continue to spin and change the house layout. Kathy looks over her looks into the shower, which seems innocuous enough, but it's actually in reality, or in the spirit reality, there is the bathtub's completely filled with blood, and that naked ghost is sitting in there looking at it.
Hot.
And she turns on the water, and it's water for a second, then it's blood, and she goes to go splash her face, and the fucking ghost is raising up her knife to go cut Shannon Elizabeth's sweet fucking tits off, and then all of a sudden Arthur knocks on the door. Duh, 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 duh. She misses, and then she says, he says, Bobby's missing, and she narrowly escapes the attack from that ghost. Whew!
Now you mentioned,
pretty intense.
You mentioned Tommy earlier. Do you think that he masturbates more just to the house? In the gearing.
No. I don't think he'd jerk off to Tit Lady. There's a lack of feet that you get to see in it.
Right.
Secondly, he's a BBW guy. Big beautiful woman.
Yeah.
So I think it's 0-2 here.
Yeah, yeah. We find that guy getting fed by the midget. Pop him in the lady's boobies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now Tommy's on.
Yeah. Slather her in pea soup and let's get to go to town.
I'll be honest, I could use a pillow right now.
I just want to see in my lifetime the actual George Lucas vision of the entire Star Wars film done in midgets. Except for Chewbacca. Chewbacca is about full size.
He's eating them.
So.
Chewie is the only big
character.
The
only normal
character,
yes.
Even the Rancor is a fucking tiny person.
Come on, the Rancor. I mean, he's like a monster.
The little Bantha is a little midget Bantha that's like, ah,
you like
eat
a normal cow, you know? So,
Bobby hears voices telling him all types of stuff downstairs. You can hear voices that are telling him, come down here, and other ones that say, go up there, stay up. So Bobby, being the curious kid he is, he goes to go check it out because he thinks his family is messing with him. Mm-hmm. Arthur, Dennis, Maggie, and Kathy find them have a little powwow about what to do. Arthur finds the walls to be quite indestructible, and Arthur says that he's not letting Dennis out of his sight until they find his boy. And then we get this classic Maggie line. Rod Digger goes, "What happened to the lawyer? He split?" Ooh, here for the comic relief and the hot jams, Ra.
Now, I do like that line by Ra, but what is it saying about her nannying? She was watching one child.
That is
true. In a house you can see through.
You had one job. You're really failing hard on a family that's strapped for cash.
How much are they paying you?
I mean, it can't be much. It can't be a whole lot. I mean, you picked this woman who can't cook breakfast for you.
Yeah.
She's a stay-at-home nanny. She's done no nannying at all.
And she's just teaching your son to be a sarcastic douche.
Yes, exactly. And how to listen to ludicrous songs.
How dare you? We gave you $3 an hour to look after our child.
So in the basement, Bobby's getting scared. He's yelling for his family. Dennis explains that the ghosts can go past the glass because of the writing on it. They're actually spells that are written on it. And he goes, "The whole basement is filled with ghosts." Like, have you ever just heard somebody that's coming up to you? He's like, "There's a basement down there, literally filled with ghosts, filled with it to the brim, like a fucking, you pick up that glass, it spills ghosts out if you were to pick it up." So he gives them the spectral viewers to the family, which are the special glasses so that you can see the ghosts. Mm-hmm. They switches back to Bobby, who's seeing all types of ghosts. He gets to see the torso and the prom queen back to back. Bobby ends up knocking himself out by running into a wall.
On a scooter,
on a razor.
You said you saw this in the theater?
I did.
Now, when the ticket taker gave you the glasses, did he say that here are your spectral viewers? And you'd be like, "You mean my 3D glasses?" "No, they're spectral viewers, sir."
Kid, just take the viewer.
No. No, I actually corrected him. And he was just like, "Here's your 3D glasses." "Excuse me, sir? Sir?
Garcon?"
"These are actually spectral viewers for the show." And then that was the first time that I was called a faggot in public. That was,
And then for some reason, while you were leaning back after the movie, somebody just started instantly punching you in your seat.
"How's your spectral viewers now, kid?"
By the way, when you're with black people in a movie, never say "shut the fuck up" during a movie.
R.I.P. Brock Snyder. So Dennis explains that the ghost can't pass through that, gives them the spectral viewers. Meanwhile, and then Bobby knocks himself out. Okay, now I just read the notes that I just did. Okay.
Yes.
Arthur then makes a deal with Dennis, says that he'll pay him everything that Cyrus owes him if he helps him find his son. So in the basement, Bobby can see his mom now. He kind of comes to, and he can see his mom. She's in a hospital gown. She's all fucking burned up like Freddy Krueger, because she died in a fucking horrible house fire. But he also sees Cyrus, and then Cyrus fucking scares him, and he's like, cut scene. So the ghost of Cyrus and his mom are both down in the basement as well. So Dennis creeps his way around with his family. Arthur and he split up, and Maggie and Dennis go the other way. So they head back to they go past the ghost covered with railroad spikes, who is the Hammer. Matthew Lillard puts on his fucking glasses, and I would say he's the coolest makeup effects of all the ghosts.
For
he's
sure.
basically this giant jacked black dude that like looks like he's had railroad spikes hammered into like 80% of his body,
and he's pulling them out and putting them back in.
Yeah, he's just like, "Oh, just checking this one out right here.
I thought I had an infection. I do, but that's how it works."
Why does he keep pulling it out and putting it? Just keep them out. Why are you taking them out and putting them back?
You're only hurting yourself.
You know, he obviously couldn't do this in the real world, so he does this in the ethereal world. Like, I got a bunch of ethereal spectrum. I'm going to put them in my skull just to scare people and actually see me with the spectral glasses on.
Yeah. You know, body modding got really crazy in the 2000s. Mm-hmm. We can all admit that, right?
OJ Simpson.
He also adds on, he goes, I hate it when they do that. He was just like, they wait for you to put the glasses on, and when you do, they're right in your face like this, which
gets,
is just,
he gets the humor of ghosts.
Yeah, you know, that Matthew Lillard, he knows how to, he knows how to talk about stuff.
I would
stuff.
Really prefer that they had cast the guy from the Green Mile, and he would also cry when he was trying to beat people up. So.
Yeah. Yes.
You made me do this.
Arthur then finds Bobby's tape recorder. He rewinds it and hears screaming. Kathy assures Arthur that everything's going to be fine and they're going to find Bobby no problem. And then... it goes back to Matthew Lillard and Rod Digga. He then goes to this one wall and he goes, oh man, this is the sign of the jackal. If the jackal's out, we need to get out. So,
which, like, I have a bit of a problem with this.
Yeah.
Because it seems like the jackal's got to be the worst one.
Yeah, yeah.
All it does is scratch you.
Yeah, it's not. That's it's it. A scratcher. It really doesn't do much of anything.
Seems like the hammer's the one you should really be concerned with.
That hammer and the guy that can fold you like a fucking flapjack.
Yeah!
Those are the two main concerns for you right now.
I don't
now.
Care about the kid with the arrow.
Nope.
I don't care about John Wayne Gacy and a midget.
So,
I saw its mother, Mr. Fawn. It was a jackal.
So... they switch back to Kathy and Tony Shalhoub, and all of a sudden she gets attacked by the jackal, who does look pretty awesome. He's like, he's in a straight jacket, and he has like a giant cage around his head where like some of the bars are broken in the front. Looks like a fucking psychopath, and basically drags her across the floor, throws her up on the wall. Obviously, Tony Shalhoub, Arthur can't see any of this, and she's just getting scratched up. Exposes one of her titties briefly. I did notice the channel a little bit.
Or at least
did,
an open bra.
Yes, gets open broad in this scene.
Okay.
Well, I mean, if you want to see her titties, watch American Pie. It was like 2 years earlier.
Yeah.
You can see them in full effect.
Yeah.
So
now, as another man who has skin problems, Jeremy, can I ask you, wouldn't it be nice to just have the jackal lying around every now and then? Just... take care of
just like go
business.
To town right here and just start scratching.
I am getting tired of my fingers on there. Just get it. Get it.
Me and the jackal, we made friendship.
He was my scratching buddy, and I had a need that needed to be scratched.
I had palaver with, well, it wasn't really palaver. She just scratched me.
It's like two sex addicts meeting. It's fun.
Yeah.
They're like, we know it's a problem, but we can help each other out.
I think this is mutually beneficial.
I had to keep her locked up 99.9% of the time. But I would let her go, and she would just get my back sometimes. And then I'd put her back in her cage, much like a Mexican.
You know, that spot you can't reach.
So. Much like a Mexican.
So
that would hit you a little late, didn't it? Hit you a little kind of like hard liquor sometimes.
I was focused
it takes
on
a minute.
My yes
so.
And.
So we think that the jackal has her dead to rights, but then all of a sudden, here comes Kalina out of nowhere to save the day. She fucking throws a lit flare at the jackal, which somehow stops him because his flares are the thing that stops him.
Did you say Ric Flair? She throws Ric Flair.
She fucking throws a figure four leg lock on
it's
the
so
jackal.
Shiny.
He taps out like for like 5 minutes, but she doesn't break the hold. She doesn't at all.
The ref comes in. Come on!
This
come
is the
on!
Figure eight. I got him. Run, family.
Now, the movie Ghostbusters, they have like nuclear guns that kind of they fight the things. In this movie, they throw a flare at the gun, and that does it.
And that,
oh no, a flare!
Oh god! And it's never explained why the flare worked. They never use it again.
Gosh.
They're like, oh, this seems like an effective tool to get the ghosts to move. Nope, never again do they ever do that again.
I'm just waiting for the end of the movie. Like, how are we going to end this? What if we throw three flares together and they hit at the same time?
So
cross the flares.
So they're able to drag... They're able to drag her down the hallway and as Kalina saves the day. Now, meanwhile, Dennis and Maggie are pinned down between the firstborn son and the angry princess, a.k.a. Sweet Tits.
It's getting sticky.
The firstborn son is like a guy who, a little kid who has like an arrow shot through his head. Arguably the least scariest of everybody. Mm-hmm. He's actually just an adorable little boy with an arrow stuck through mm-hmm. his head. He doesn't hurt anybody throughout the film. As far as we know, he might have been a nice ghost, much like
I'm
the
sure
burned lady, because the burned lady was a nice ghost, right? They're not all dicks.
I've watched Casper a lot of times. And I know anything about young ghosts.
Yeah.
They're cool people.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't understand why they were scared of that ghost. So
What if Casper was really Richie Rich? You ever think about that? They look the same.
Now, because Dennis and Maggie are sharing a pair of glasses, Dennis is wearing them, and he tells Maggie to move just in time before the angry princess can slice her with the knife. He's also so she moves out of the way just in time. They drag Kathy down the hallway back to Kathy and Arthur and Kalina. And they drag her down the hallway as the jackal closes in on them. Kalina explains that this house, what the house is, and that she wants to set the souls free here. This is the Archimame I wrote down here. It's her fucking weird ass book that doesn't look old and doesn't look knowledgeable at all. It looks like a regular old dictionary that she opens up. And she says this house is a machine built by the devil and powered by the dead. And it needs all of the 13 ghosts to power up the house. So Dennis and Maggie end up getting separated as the house begins to change again. Dennis is now stuck in a room, but he chucks the glasses as it's closing to Rod Digga, a.k.a. Maggie, on the other side. Maggie then puts them on and sees that he's trapped in there with the ghost called the Torn Prince, who basically looks like a rebel without a cause or a greaser, if you will.
We're talking the movie Grease.
Yes, the movie Grease. A straight-up greaser. He's got a baseball bat, a leather jacket, and for some reason, sparks come out when he hits his bat places.
Yeah, you know how bats work.
Can I say how I'm very thankful that Cracker Barrel also took that same exact line for the house and that their main thing is... built by the devil, but powered by the dead. Cracker Barrel. So. Come to Cracker Barrel. Built by the devil, powered by the dead.
But that tilapia on Wednesday night. Ooh.
Oh, man. Jerry, that's probably the best joke you've done in weeks here. That was pretty good.
If you want, we give a complimentary cup of blood every half hour. So.
Let's start doing Cracker Barrel commercials for the middle of the show. Hey, welcome to Cracker Barrel, powered by the devil.
Built by the devil, powered by the dead.
Yeah, that reminds me of that. Do you remember the, I think it was it the Kids in the Hall or was it the State? I think it was the State. It was the State. They had a bit called Old Fashioned Guy, who's Lieutenant Dangle from Reno 911. Yes. And he is like, it was like this little bit where he come out, he's just like,
He's wearing a white suit.
Yeah, he's wearing an all white suit, and he's outside. Standing by a lake. He's like, call me old fashioned, but I still believe there's a God. And he lives in the middle of this lake, and his name is Trogdor. <It's> like, and he whistles his way off. Call me old fashioned. So
call me old fashioned, but I still believe in slavery.
Yeah. Yeah, the State had some good bits back in the day, man. That was a funny ass show.
Oh, Mr. Dangle.
And all of them went on, like 80% of that cast is like the cast of like Michael Ian Black was one of them, and like almost all the rest were on Reno 911 later. So they kind of stuck together.
And then the amalgam between him and the guy from Upright Citizens Brigade. So who wore the red bandana? So
what was the bit?
And then got really fat.
Do you remember the old MTV bit where he's like, I'm in jail, Dad. I'm in jail.
And it's like a thing Eldridge always talked about, and I don't even remember where the hell
it
came from.
And I like it.
I have to dig that one up.
So Rod Digga has to basically yell at him and scream for him to move around the room to avoid his attacks. Now, next, he's able to get out of the room, and Dennis and Mags run into the great child and the dire mother, which is Jeremy Woodworth and our mother,
and a midget.
Essentially.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because our mother is basically a midget at
Force
this point.
Force-feeding Jeremy pea soup.
She is. If she is 5 feet tall, it's not anymore. Like, if you straightened her spine
heels.
Back up, if you straightened her spine
heels.
Again, then she would be 5 feet tall, but she's not.
Okay,
she's a very tiny,
okay,
frail woman.
Now it's time for my theme song.
Okay.
You ready?
Okay, yeah. Oh, I am ready, actually. This time, for once in my life, Jeremy, I'm ready.
Okay.
For you to talk about Mom.
This is what Eric loves. This is his whole reason for this podcast, because I'm fucking insane. Why I haven't been locked up for years now. And come into my world. This is my world.
Welcome to Jeremy's world.
You get to understand me, but it won't help you if you die. So, Mother has always had scoliosis pretty bad. I must have been maybe 7, 8 years old. I'm lying in my bed at night, and what happens is my dad comes into my room and starts feeling my back in the middle of the night. And I'm like,
okay.
What the fuck is going on? I'm a little kid. I don't think I'm going to get raped.
He's not getting raped!
But my dad feels my back. He's like, yeah, it's good and straight. Yeah. And I'm thinking, oh, okay, he's checking for scoliosis in the middle of the night. All right. And it's just, you know, your dads do creepy things sometimes. They don't explain it to, like, a child, you know. Anybody that just doesn't get raped by their dad, I applaud you. I applaud you.
Wow, that's probably the creepiest dad story I've ever heard.
Yeah,
right there.
100% true.
Wow, so your dad checked out your spine in the middle of the night one night.
And after that, I always slept in the closet.
Oh,
so
you okay,
never
cool.
find me. I'm kidding. I wish I had.
And let's be honest, Jeremy still hasn't come out of that one.
The closet.
Oh, he sucks dick. Okay.
Only for the money. I don't enjoy it.
So, they run away from the dire child and the great child and the dire mother. And they get past the small lady who does nothing. I mean, they just literally run right past her. Like, you're just a tiny ghost. I'm going to just walk past you.
Watch out, it's a midget ghost!
They run to meet up with Kalina as they pull Arthur up. Basically, they find a little opening in the ceiling. They're able to pull Arthur and Kalina up just seconds before the jackal closes
so
in on
close.
Them. Because the jackal apparently... Ghosts can't fly. They have to walk regular distances like everybody
and
else.
And it was coming to tickle the shit out of Arthur's little toesies.
Hope you like scratches, because here I come.
You know, the worst part about fighting the midget ghost is you have to put your hand out on its forehead as it swings at you. So. Brad Williams joke. Thank you, Brad Williams.
But just as they're about to pull Arthur up, he does get clawed up by the jackal pretty bad. So when he comes up, he looks like fucking Passion of the Christ when they get him up there. They throw a flare at it because flares are the only thing that works on ghosts, apparently. And they as they're making a run for it, they run into the Pilgrimess, who is a ghost that looks like she's still in a stockade from like the Salem witch trial era. Of ghosting, and she's still wearing the stocks, which seems, I mean, God, even in death, you have to wear those things. That sucks ass bad.
Get it together.
So, all the gang then reunites within the study as they shut the door and start talking about the ghosts. And Kalina casts some shade on Dennis by telling him who the fourth ghost is, that Dennis helped him capture their mother to be part of this.
Dun, dun.
Dun, dun. Because the mother is the withered lover. So.
I didn't know, man!
Arthur then goes and punches Dennis and explains that Cyrus picked all of them. It wasn't his choice.
Can I say that Laurie Sofer, the midget from 13 Ghosts, this is her one... only thing, except she was in the X-Files as Townfolk, 3'11".
Oh, ooh. Fucking hot.
Yes.
Real
just
hot.
My time.
She's no Phil Fondacaro when it comes to her career.
So, just a quick rundown. I know Jeremy went over it so much in that song. She goes over all of the ghosts. One is the firstborn son. We talked about him briefly. He's the dude with the little kid with the arrow through his...
The torso!
The torso is pretty much the lamest of all the ghosts. He's literally just arms and a body, nothing else, and a head wrapped in cellophane that just goes... Like, what is this torso going to do to you? How, if you die at the hands of the torso, that's pretty...
You're scared for a second until it gets next to you. You're like, buddy.
Well, the only bad part is if you...
Kick him with one foot. Like,
give him a nudge.
Wait a minute.
If you're like crawling away from you and he actually catches up with you, he does the little teapot thing and pours his neck juice into your mouth.
This is icky.
Number three is the bound woman. You get to see her briefly, but she's basically a cheerleader that gets killed by a horrible boyfriend who buries her at the 50-yard line or something like that. Mm-hmm. At least that's her backstory. I don't know. She does nothing in this movie except is seen a couple of times. There's nothing that she does. The withered lover is Arthur's wife, as well as Bobby and Kathy's mom. She got burned up in the fire. The torn prince, we went over briefly, but he's the greaser with the baseball bat. The angry princess is Sweet Tits. The pilgrimess, we went over her really briefly, but she's in like a stockade. Number 8 and 9 are the great child and the dire mother, which are basically just this giant man child and her midget mother.
Can I tell you who, if we ever redo it, who the torn prince would be?
Yes.
It'd be the actual artist known as Prince, and he was torn in half from an elevator.
Torn
Prince.
Okay.
I'm sorry, that's a lame joke.
I see what you went
with
that.
It's going to be tough casting.
Listen, not every bit is a winner, Jeremy. But the ones that aren't.
Just ask my set. Am I right, fellas?
Hey.
Doves cry.
I'm lonely.
Number 10 is the Hammer, who we've got to see pretty extensively in the movie so far. He's the giant black man with all the railroad spikes. The Jackal, who's been very prevalent so far. Crazy guy in the straitjacket. And the last is the guy from the opening scene, the Juggernaut. Now, Dennis then chimes in and says, but wait a minute, Cyrus said there were 13 ghosts, and he says, no, there's 13 is like failsafe.
My TV makes me so bored,
makes me say, oh my lord, what is this garbage here? Want to cover my eyes and plug my ears? This sucks, and that's no lie. It's about as much fun as watching paint dry. Those IQ one notch.
That's the reason why I can't watch.
Can't
watch.
So Kalina says the 13th ghost is a willing human sacrifice of life. By leaping into the eye as an act of true love, it can stop the whole process of opening up this eye, which can let you see into hell and then probably bad things. I'm going to go with bad things happen.
Guess.
They don't really explain what it can do, except that it's pretty bad shit right there.
Good guess. Now, I do want to point out, in this scene, when Tony Shalhoub and Matthew Lillard are fighting at 1 hour, 3 minutes and 50 seconds, you catch a real nice crew member in a reflection.
Oh yeah.
Now I like to call those pulling a Ben, because I've worked on some films before, and some listeners and you guys probably know Brandon Lesquier. He put together a horror comedy called The Back Page.
Yeah.
Now there's a pretty important scene in there where two cast members, a man and a woman, are getting a massage done in an apartment. And this scene took 3 days to shoot. It's a 10-minute scene.
Okay.
I was one of the crew members on that scene. Mm-hmm. And there's one shot, very important shot for the whole movie, where I'm just standing in the background, and my reflection is in this picture.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just making the most kind of aroused face with the awake part. Just,
yeah, that's hot.
And Brandon Lesquier... doesn't hire me anymore.
And this is on purpose, or it was a mistake?
Complete mistake. I found out about it months later. But on purpose, I did say, Brandon says this, I don't remember saying it, but it's very likely. We walked into the set, and there was a girl who had to be basically topless for the scene.
Nice.
And what came out of my mouth was, hey guys, looks like a porn set, am I right?
and Brandon didn't want me in the basement.
Oh,
after that.
That fucking cuck. Yeah.
Can I say I had one of the best experiences in one of my last shoots where, because one of the cameramen had told the people that were running the hotel that we were making a film, we got kicked out of our rooms at 10 o'clock at night after we had gone to sleep.
What? Awesome. That's fucking horrible.
But you told them ahead of time you were making the movie?
No, it was completely guerrilla.
Oh.
Even though the director had been doing it for probably 10 years now.
Wow.
And even though they found out weeks before, they were like, okay, well, he's a good paying customer, but this one manager was a super... the C word, and still kicked us out. So,
well, did they look into his body of work? Because from what I've heard, you're molesting boys in
this. Yes, mm-hmm. and completely.
It's the part he was born to play.
let's just say there's still a part of me that might want to give really bad advertising
some more business
advertising for this hotel, just despite that fucking manager S. So, which might involve some streaking. So
now we're talking.
I like that your nudity is your comeback, your get-even point.
They won't do it again!
Look at my peephole!
My favorite local director named Mark Colgrove did a thing with this other director named Kratz, where they totally do the worst commercial for Checkers, where they have a pedophile crossing.
Like a school crossing?
Yeah. It's like, hey, at Checkers, we even have pedophile crossings. So, oh my gosh. And they finally took it down. It was called To Catch a Pervert, and it was the greatest student film ever made in Baltimore. Kratz needs to put it back up, so...
So, Kalina and Maggie head in one direction as Dennis and Arthur head in another to go find Still, their lost son. Using the spell glass, basically, they unhook one of them, and Arthur and Matthew Lillard walk down the hallways holding a piece of spell glass. So it's like, mm-hmm. Oh, it's like our little shield that we got here, yeah. You know, against them.
It's like every comedy from the 80s and 90s.
Yes. You're just.
I hope a car doesn't drive by.
So Kalina then goes to check out the machine downstairs with Maggie, and it is breathtaking piece of CGI. What can we say? It's not a real set of gears down there.
But it looks just good.
It looks good. It's a decent piece of CGI. It actually looks like the, you know, the intro to Lionsgate films where they open all the fucking gates and stuff. Like, it looks kind of like that. Yeah. So
was this a Lionsgate?
I don't believe it's a Lionsgate film. It's a Dark Castle film. Do you remember? Are you familiar with Dark Castle? Because
no.
One of
what
their,
about Dark Castle?
One of their biggest movies.
I have the power. Sorry.
I remember one of the movies that Dark Castle produced.
Dark Castle
was the movie Castle Freak. Are you familiar with Castle Freak, Jeremy?
I know of Dark Castle and Hardwick. It was like a show with the black guy.
Okay,
and...
No. But the movie Castle Freak is some
Stuart
of the most
Gordon.
Yeah,
Stuart Gordon.
Some of the most male dongle you'll see in a film too. You see
Crampton.
a lot of male dongle.
Barbara
in
Crampton
that movie.
Offers her body to save her daughter.
Yes.
Look at this. Take some of this, Castle Freak.
So,
which, by the way, she was in one of the last season 2 openers for Ash vs. Evil Dead, where she says wet.
Yes.
It's just on repeat in Jeremy's house.
Wet. I met Barbara Crampton, and within 1 minute she's like, I have a husband and a kid.
Stop saying wet to me.
Stop coming on to me, you freak.
So we go back to see what Arthur and Dennis are doing, and now they're being attacked by the Torn Prince. But luckily they got the spell glass, so it's kind of bouncing off of the spell glass, but he's hitting it with a baseball bat, but they realize, oh shit, the motherfucker got a little bit of Mark McGuire, some Bobby Bonilla in
Matthew Lillard's best line right here.
Yeah.
He's swinging for the fences!
So, as they switch back to go check on Maggie and Kalina, and all of a sudden, Cyrus, the ghost of Cyrus, appears, scares the shit out of Maggie, and as she's kind of taken back by seeing Cyrus there, all of a sudden, Kalina goes and takes the book and whacks her on the back of the neck, knocking her out. She's actually been working with Cyrus for the whole time. She goes over to him. He's been alive. He's not even...
He's alive this whole time.
I
was still not able to put that together. From that point until the end, three times.
No, well, the part where you can really tell is when Arthur figures it out, because he takes the glasses off.
Yeah.
And then he's still there, so you can see him without the glasses on.
Sure.
We find out that Cyrus was actually alive. Kalina and Cyrus have been working together this whole time, but he's pissed because they don't know where the spells are in the fucking book. She left them somewhere. I don't know. She fucked something up, but they don't have the fucking right spells. It's never explained. It means nothing to the rest of the movie.
Isn't there like a big hole where there's a big reel-to-reel tape that goes into the book?
So,
because that's how those work.
Oh, where is the 8-track? Tell me what you did with the 8-track.
So, meanwhile, Matthew Lillard and Tony Shalhoub are pinned down. Dennis ends up getting pinned down and absolutely brutalized by the hammer and the juggernaut.
And you realize what they do, right?
What's that?
They actually have a reel-to-reel of Starland Vocal Band's Afternoon Delight, but they have to play it backwards. So it tells the incantation to open Satan's oculus. Started up this morning feeling so uptight. Play it backwards.
So ultimately, the hammer goes and takes fucking Matthew Lillard and basically uses him like a slap bracelet across the corner of this wall and folds him in half and ultimately ends the life of our favorite character, Matthew Lillard, R.I.P. I think we're beering up again. Yeah, beer me up. Let's do this. Let's do it. Stone cold it
final,
over here.
Final.
Stone cold.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Hot potato.
I ain't worried about it.
You like ice? Air bar.
So, R.I.P. Matthew Lillard.
Be
I'm trying to think of how many movies. This is the second movie that Matthew Lillard doesn't live through. You know, he had been in Scream, right? Doesn't make it through Scream. Now he's died in 13 Ghosts.
Look, I'll be honest. I never saw Scream.
I don't know if he lives through Hackers or not. I can't remember Hackers vividly enough. But I know he's in Hackers because he wears those fucking little Yachty fucking hair beads.
Before it was cool.
Before it was cool. Yeah. Actually, I think Hackers is supposed to be taking place now. So, like, it's actually a very accurate, like, hairstyle that he wears back in that movie.
Yeah, because before then it was just, hey, I went to Jamaica and I'm back.
Yes, but now, it, like, in that movie, it's the little Yachty's shit exactly. Which means that, I didn't want to say this, guys, Matthew Lillard, actual prophet. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, Lil Yachty, actual hacker.
Yes. Yeah, so. He's pretty hack. Yeah.
A boom.
Hey.
You can catch Eric Woodward there. Wits end.
So, Cyrus starts this incantation via Kalina's tapes. It's these like little reel-to-reel tapes. He starts playing this incantation, and all of the ghosts start to disappear and head for the center of the house where the machine is, that giant fucking ocular thing in the floor. Mm-hmm. Cyrus ends up crushing Kalina in like that little wall that like as it like there's like this little wall space, and he ends up like fucking smushing her in this as the
pretty
house
cool
changes.
Again. Not bad.
Yeah, well deserved. Fuck that bitch.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
She used flares to help people. I don't like it. You had spells and incantations.
You don't know
you're a bad guy anyway. You get smushed. Mm-hmm. That was pretty dope. Art then watches helplessly as he sees his both of his children in the center of this machine, surrounded by all of the 12 ghosts on the outside. His children plead for help to make it stop. Art faces off against Cyrus. He sees Cyrus in the hallway. He actually takes off his glasses, realizes that he's not a ghost at all. They have a little fist fight in what could be the oldest middle-aged man fight you've ever seen. That he's just easily, Art Monk is easily bested by the guy from Scarface.
Yeah, imagine
immediately.
Anyone's still living father fighting someone else's still living father.
It's like a dad fight. Yeah.
The only thing that's worse is drunken Russian fights. They can barely even punch each other.
So he tells him, he's like, I'm willing to do anything for greatness. And Cyrus tells him that they need to jump into the machine. So they put Maggie in the most stereotypical thing, and Maggie is downstairs, and she starts scratching records.
Jump in the machine!
She starts scratching the, like, basically taking the incantation and, like, remixing it.
Yeah, you know,
like,
how faders work.
Because you know when black people see this, like, oh, shit, this incantation is dope, but it'd be better with a little chop and screw.
Oh, shit, I bet I turn these volume faders up. It's gonna...
All of a sudden, some of the ghosts have, like glow sticks in their mouth and start, ecstasy. Woo.
So, all of a sudden, the ghosts are freed from the spell, and they go to pick up Cyrus, and they throw him into the fucking spinning blades
Kick
of the
ass.
Floor, which is pretty cool. It just turns him into fucking mincemeat, like, instantly. Mm-hmm. Which
and
is
his face
cool.
comes at the camera in 3D.
But now that everything is, like, spinning out of control, and Rod Digga has fucking pressed a bunch of the levers downstairs, the machine is kind of spinning out of control, and Arthur kind of looks at and stands at the edge of it, seeing his family on the other side of these spinning blades. And this is probably the hardest part of the movie for me to understand: A, why he does it; B, what's the purpose of doing it; and C, me being able to suspend my disbelief enough to believe that this schlub named Tony Shalhoub, star of the movie The Addams Family up until this part, is able to jump in and avoid all of these spinning blades, this gyroscope of death, so that he can reunite with his family for mere seconds, because the fucking house pretty much explodes right after that. It means there's no need for him to do any of this.
Eric, I think I can answer your question.
Why did the house explode?
Because I think Rod Digga, like, moved a bunch of the levers and made it start spinning out of control. Mm-hmm. But it was just like, you could have just, like, taken cover somewhere, and it wouldn't have mattered at all. You didn't need to be in that middle part with your children.
Here's why he did it. 2 years before this film came out, a masterpiece of cinema was released, known by some as The Mystery Men.
Okay,
I'm
listening.
In that film, there was a group of people who went into a mansion that would open a portal, and the mansion started falling apart. Now, do you remember, in The Mystery Men, how they fixed the mansion?
I don't remember that.
A group hug, Eric. So Tony Shalhoub was just taking advice from his most recent option, The Mystery Men, and group hugging.
And was this before Men in Black, where he played the guy at the
All
pawn
right,
shop?
I buy that.
Yeah,
I thought he was the guy at the pawn shop in Men in Black.
No, that was John. Oh no, Johnny Knoxville's the one with the.
No, that's part two.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
that guy's... He's in part two, too, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Sorry, my bad. I was preparing some audio for
some little
for later.
Yeah, that was dope.
My bad.
I just want to say, every movie, no matter what, they can get to the end and it's like, oh, no! It's the end of the movie. Everything's going to blow up for no reason whatsoever. Oh, my gosh!
So, as the family hugs each other in the center of, like, now the dilapidated gyroscope or whatever, they see their mom. She's reappeared. She's kind of, like, circling the outside on one of the little spinny things. And they're like, oh, that's mom. Mm-hmm. Hi, it's good to see you. And she's restored. She's not burned anymore because she's now freed. All the rest of the ghosts go out into, like, the night of the evening, and are like, oh, all those horrible murderous spirits are now back in
starting
free
Night
again.
Breed tart part two.
Back in New York City, which is how Ghostbusters started.
Yes. And this movie.
But now they're gonna be female.
This movie wouldn't be complete without one more sassy line.
Ooh,
and I do have the audio.
She knocks it out of the park.
Here is the very last line of the film here, the very last line, is provided to us by none other than Rod Digger herself.
I'm sorry, family, Kathy, Bobby, Uncle, Ghost. I am sick of this nanny shit. I've had it. This was not in the job description. I quit!
And then they close with this dope-ass Rod Digger song here.
Which is good. It's not bad.
Well, this is Mirror, Mirror.
For the 2000s?
Yeah. This is a pretty dope beat right here.
I was in a house with 13 ghosts. I'm a nanny, but I don't know what I'm doing.
You got a future in this hip-hop game, Jeremy.
Yeah. I'm ready to go blackface any day.
I don't think that's going to get you far.
I got my black suit, and I'm ready to get down on one knee and defend America.
And that brings us to an end of 13 Ghosts, Jeremy. Ooh. Yeah, we did it, everybody.
I almost started watching the 1960 version, so.
Yeah. You know, oddly enough, the 1960s version.
So did I.
The guy who made the 1960s or wrote the original 13 Ghosts also wrote the original House on Haunted Hill.
Ah.
And the guy who, House on Haunted Hill, the remake for that had actually come out a year before the movie 13 Ghosts.
No
and
kidding.
Both enjoyed commercial success pretty similar.
Hmm.
So, just goes. Goes to show you. You know, you can just
look at that.
You can just make shit over again yeah. all the time. If somebody bought it once, somebody will fucking buy it again.
Yep.
Are they going to make another Star Wars? You got your fucking ass right. They're going to make
right.
another Star Wars. Mm-hmm. They make more Harry Potters? Yes, they're going to keep making Harry Potters
yep.
until anything Disney owns, they will keep making
oh, yeah.
Terminators, fucking
Alien?
Any,
Alien? Do they own Alien?
They'll make Aliens.
Keep
There's a new Predator movie
out.
Coming out.
I'll watch
and
it.
I'm already throwing money at it. You
yeah.
just told me a new Alien or Predator movie.
Yeah.
I'm giving you my money already. So
I am all set for Predator Goes to Washington and Predator Goes to College. So
what the fuck are you? What do you mean things aren't all in infrared?
Good times. A lot of fun, guys. A lot of fun. I think that's our show, guys. Jeremy, you have anything you'd like to plug?
No.
My favorite are Jeremy's plugs.
This is my life.
Mr. Hancock, thank you for joining us on the show this wonderful evening or day, whenever people are listening to
it. Thanks, Justin Hancock.
Would you like to plug all your endeavors?
Yeah. You can catch me doing audio work on the Laugh Finder podcast.
Audiomancer, Ben.
Oh, wait a second. That's a podcast that people actually listen to.
It's true.
It?
Yes. It's true. We have 12 people,
mm-hmm.
and I stole all your ideas, and I read reviews, too. So if you want to leave us a review and actually hear it read, Laugh Finder podcast. You can catch me on... Let's see, Instagram is Benjamin Handcrotch, Twitter, Ben Foot Penis. I do comedy in Baltimore. Maybe I'll be on a Riff in Time sometime.
We're doing a Riff in Time this coming Tuesday in Frederick, if you want to come all the way out there.
It's a Riff in Time!
I'm taking the show on the road.
Oh,
taking the
shit.
Show on the road.
Wait, so are you done with Wits End then?
No, I'm still doing it at the Wits End. I just had a buddy of mine, Ryan Nazer, very funny comedian. He has a room up there on Tuesday nights, and it was the night before, obviously, the 4th of July coming up. So
cool.
I was like, yeah, let's come and I'll come and do the thing there, because he's been asking for a little while. I was like, yeah, we can come and do it sometime up
Who's
there.
Who's that other one that sounds like him? Is it Brian Glazer? The one that worked at the theater?
Eric Glazer.
Jerry's the worst. Brian Glazer.
He was so close.
Honestly, it's the best one he's ever done.
Yeah.
There was a time where Jeremy was talking about a story about it was another Eric. It was like Eric. It was Eric Joliker, and Eric. He was talking about Eric. He's like, let me tell you the story about Eric Joliker. He was at the movies in this, and it was until we got to the very end of it. He was just like, that's Eric Glazer. He was like, oh, I guess it was a little off topic. he told a 5-minute anecdote about the wrong person.
His name was Eric, wasn't it?
That's close so enough. Good.
Yeah, you hit it on the head.
I hate to say I did see Candace Saunders, and I thought that she was another black woman, too. So
I felt
really guilty.
I forgot to bring this up at the beginning of the show, Ben, but maybe we can bring it up at the end here. Mm-hmm. We talked down to the Discovery Channel.
Oh, yeah, guys.
I don't even remember when we did this.
That would have been on the Terminator episode.
Oh, what did we say about the Discovery Channel?
Shit on the Mythbusters?
Oh, yeah. Fuck the Mythbusters. They ruin things for people.
You and me, baby, ain't nothing but mammals, so let's do it like they do on the Discovery Channel. Getting horny now!
Ben, blur that penis out right now. Ben, burn that the penis right
and,
now.
So
that's what he does, though, Jeremy. Are you familiar with Ben? He actually goes and, like, all those episodes of Naked and Afraid and like Bear Grylls where he gets naked, he goes in and digitally blurs all the penises and the vaginas.
It's and hard work, Jeremy. It's a penis thing.
Was his penis really that long to be blurred out? But my cousin actually got to play Timothy Treadwell, the guy that was eaten by bears, even though he thought the bears were his friends and everything.
Oh, shit. Was he naked?
No.
Well, then I didn't do it, Jeremy.
So, God. I forget what show is like one of these shows. So
I can also
something good on Discovery.
That's our cousin Joshua. Yeah, he did a reenactment, one of the reenactments of the guy.
Discovery.
Yeah. So we were watching that. Now he just recently ran this last Tuesday in one of the Republican districts up in Harford County
as a politician.
Yes. He tried to get elected, and I saw this thing. It was a little blurb that came up that he says
Hunter. That was the name of the show.
Oh yeah, that's a classic. That's top-notch Discovery programming.
I can't vote for him because I'm a registered independent, so I can't vote for in primaries anyway.
Yeah.
But additionally, he's not in my district anyway, so I just kind of like
independent. You can't vote in primaries.
Can't vote in primaries
unless
in
there is an independent.
Unless there's some kind of independent person, you can't vote in primaries.
You're registered as independent.
I am.
I was for a long time. Yeah.
Oh God! Look, I've never disrespected Jeremy more than saying I was a registered independent.
He's a red-blooded American, Trump-supporting, gun-shooting.
So, as
he's
I was
wearing
watching,
a Captain America shirt.
As I was watching, the things unfold, I saw my cousin Josh post up. He's like, hey, voting's really tight, I can use all your votes tonight. So I woke up early in the morning because I wake up usually about 4 or 5 a.m. every day to get ready for work.
Sure.
But I woke up a little extra early because I want to watch the polls coming out.
Yeah.
And I finally got to his district and I was like, oh, district 7. And I was like, oh, looks like he lost number 1, right? And then I was like, oh, second place. Oh, he didn't come in second place. And then they showed third place. I was like, oh, he didn't come in third place. And then fourth place. Didn't come in fourth place. Didn't come in fifth place. This is like the sixth shot from this district. It's the last two.
What even is the politician he's going for?
Yeah.
It's like second.
Yeah. It's like it's a Maryland House.
There was 13 Maryland people running, and he was 9 out of 13.
Yeah, he was low. He was just barely made the news. He had like 1,500 votes. He barely made the news.
Well, voting was tight.
So voting was tight. He lost by 7,000 votes.
It's like so many people in the freaking district.
I know. There's only so many people. You realize there's like 14,000 people that voted, and he got 1,000 of them. So that, good for him.
No, he got 1,500, and there was like at least 5 or 6 people that got around 1,500 each between the way they spread them out. But either way, so.
Man, you can't be good at politics unless you're with the Illuminati, bro.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're willing to do like
you
a kid
can win
fuck
any
orgy.
Election if you have $1 million.
That's not true.
Orgy.
You got to have multiple millions the higher you want to get. So anyway, I don't know. Listen, we're sorry we disrespected the Discovery Channel.
It's okay.
Okay?
I disrespect it most days.
Okay.
Sorry you have a real job.
You can catch all things Eric Comedy at ericcomedy.com. Eric with a K, comedy with a C. Got a lot of big shows coming up. Go hop on there. We're going to be in Annapolis. We're going to be in... actually, this won't come out in time, but you might be able to see the Annapolis show if you're listening to it Monday night before then. You can check out Kimberly Ambrose at Watch Me Doing This on Twitter and Panic at the Deli on Instagram. The second Saturday shit show is free every second Saturday of the month. Myself Eric Woodworth will be up there in November headlining a show. You should definitely come check it out. Jeremy P. Woodworth, give us a 5-star rating and take us out.
5 stars! 13 ghosts! Not 8, not 2, not 12, but 13!